Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Bhutam dhammam sangham namassam. So just a setting, taking homage in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, that of gratitude for the teachings and the person who first enunciated these teachings in this era, and also the community that hold the teachings to carry it forward. We just ended a retreat period, and our community was in retreat for 6 weeks. And prior to that, I was on retreat in another location in Barre, Massachusetts. There's a retreat center called Forest Refuge. And the teachers there, Bhante Ujjagara, who was a meditation master and monk, and Shaila Catherine, who is a lay teacher, who's been given, what do you call it, the permission, the acknowledgement that she's qualified to teach. By her master, her teacher, Paul Oxaida. And they are both students, actually, of this elder meditation master monk. And they gave a month's teaching to a group of 30 people, which I was part of. And they taught the gradual training, which is the Buddha's teaching, to the monastics, to the monks. But it actually, anyone can use these teachings. It's important teachings that anyone, people living a lay life or in monastic life. So the first part of the gradual training is sometimes translated as guarding the sense bases. It's indriya samvara, and it's also called restraint of the sense bases. But it's, some people don't like that word. It sounds too rigid or something, or maybe a little threatening. I was thinking about that, the word restraint, and it's kind of like if you have a child, you restrain the child in order to protect them. I've been in situations where I saw a child running towards traffic, and I just grabbed the child by the shoulders. It was a small child, small enough that it could easily not be seen. He was running towards a parking lot, but still people come in quickly enough that the child could have been harmed by a car or killed. So, you know, grabbing the child, and I didn't do it in a cruel way or anything, I was doing it in a way to say, hey, stop, and brought the child to the parent. So this is kind of the idea of restraint in this, or guarding, or protecting. We're protecting our mind. The sense bases, there's six of them in the Buddha's teaching. There's the five physical senses. The internal sense bases is the eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the body, and the mind. The mind is the sixth. So then you have sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touch, and then mental phenomena or thoughts or things that arise in the mind. So the mind, there's the awareness of what's going on in the mind. You have the mind and what's going on in the mind. So as we meditate, we get more aware of that distinction to be able to kind of separate. There's a thought arising, or there's a perception arising. So regarding the mind, basically, from the input, all the sensory input that we're exposed to, what happens is we'll see a sight, and then we'll cognize, like I look and I see, right now we have a Bodhi tree in the middle of our meditation hall after our celebration of the Buddha's birthday, the Vaisak celebration. His birthday is enlightenment and his final parinibbana are all celebrated on one day. So here is this tree. And so I look at the tree, and then all the, like maybe a lot of memories of that day come up. So that's pretty neutral. That's not really problematic. But sometimes sights may trigger intense emotions or even mild emotions that we might start proliferating and building up on. Something that we really desire strongly that we shouldn't have, or anger may arise at seeing something, or at the ear, sounds. At the Hermitage, there's these dogs that are, you can hear across the canyon, and they're barking at all different hours. And so irritation starts arising, and judgments about the person who has the dogs and things like that start coming up. So I have to work with that, think about, well, is there something really I should be doing, or is it not my business? So this is kind of, I'm guarding against anger arising, or guarding against maybe fear arising, some kind of what's called unwholesome mental states. In our practice of meditation, we're working towards mental clarity and peacefulness of mind, and the unwholesome states obstruct the clarity and the wisdom of the mind. So this is what we're guarding against, is against this unwholesome states. There's also one way to describe these states as hindrances. I don't want to get into details about that right now, because that's a whole other talk about the hindrances. But basically, the unwholesome states are states of mind that are harmful to ourselves or to others. That's one way to judge. If I were to speak or act along with this mental state that's arising, would it be to my harm? Would it be to somebody else's harm? So you have to kind of reflect like that. Or if I'm just kind of like grinding away at some kind of grudge I have, even if I don't say or do anything, I'm just like thinking about it, it's harmful to me. Maybe when we're meditating, see myself, maybe the irritation rising, and then I bring my awareness to my body, and I can sense the body tensing up, my shoulders tensing up, my hands clenching. So then I'll just relax the body. And this is one way regarding our mind. We see these states arising, and then mindfulness of the body is often used in conjunction with guarding the sense basis. They go together. So this is one of the ways we protect our mind is being aware of the body. So whenever in daily activity something comes up in our mind that doesn't seem quite right, then we can just bring our awareness back to the body, to the breath, or our feet on the floor if we're standing, or our shoulders, or whatever, you know, maybe from the top of the head to the soles of the feet back up again, somehow just bringing the awareness back to the body. This helps with guarding once something's arisen and staying with the body, like having an object of meditation throughout the day helps to prevent the arising, because we're staying in the present moment. When we get into the unwholesome states, it's usually some kind of projection into the future or thoughts of the past or something like that. We've lost the moment and we're so-called somewhere else, or not really somewhere else, but in our mind we've projected ourselves in some imagined future or some recreated past, which is usually often not very accurate. So this is a important, the guarding the senses is taught to novices when they first start in the monastic path, but it's also been recommended to those who are very advanced in the path too, who've had some kind of spiritual attainment. We say there are four fruits of the of awakening that a person can experience. And these people, before full enlightenment, there's three stages before the fourth stage, which is full enlightenment. These people in training are also encouraged to guard the sense spaces in some of the teachings by the Buddha. So when during my time on retreat, I started looking at a collection of teachings. It's called the Connected Discourses, the Samyutta Nikaya, and there's a section on the six sense bases. So I started looking at that, and I got. I just happened to open to this one teaching or sutta that really inspired me. And we were on retreat with Bhante Ujjagara at our hermitage, so I actually spoke to him about this sutta because it just seemed like just the perfect thing for me to be looking at and working with. So this is the Maluka Putta Sutta, and it's elderly monk, his name was Malukya Putta. He came to the Buddha and he requested teaching. He wanted a teaching in brief that would really help him on the path, help him really make progress on the path. And the Buddha reprimanded him for coming so late into the monastic life. And what can I say to you? He was saying, you know, what can I say to the younger monks when somebody like you who's elderly come to me and ask for a teaching in brief? But he was really trying to encourage Malukaputta at the same time. It sounded maybe a little rough, but he was actually encouraging him. And so Malukaputta insisted, although, Venerable Sir, I'm old aged, burdened with years, advanced in life, come to the last stage, let the Blessed One teach the Dhamma in brief. Let the Fortunate One teach me the Dhamma in brief. Perhaps my understanding of the meaning of the Blessed One's statement, I may understand the meaning of the Blessed One's statement. Perhaps I may become an heir to the Blessed One's statement. So then the Buddha asks him, what do you think, Malokiyaputta? Do you have any desire, lust, or affection for those forms cognizable by the eye that you have not seen and never saw before, that you do not see and would not think might be seen? No, Venerable Sir. Do you have any desire, lust, or affection for sounds cognizable by the ear, odors cognizable by the nose, tastes cognizable by the tongue, for tactile objects cognizable by the body, for those mental phenomena cognizable by the mind that you have not cognized and never cognized before, and that you do not cognize and would not think might be cognized? No, Venerable Sir. So I'm going to pause here, there's more. But this is, this is kind of like one of those teachings that just kind of get you out of your intellect, I think. It reminds me, I was a Zen student, it reminds me of like a Zen koan where the teacher gives something that you can't possibly understand with the intellect and say, how can you think of something that you've never had the experience or a sound that you had no knowledge of? How could you have any desire for something like this? This is just kind of like, for me, it just like, the mind just kind of stops still for a moment, like, oh, what's that? You know? So the Buddha asks this question. So then he gives further instruction. Here, Malokiyaputta, regarding things seen, heard, sensed, and cognized by you, in the seen there will be merely the seen, in the heard there will be merely the heard, in the sensed there will be merely the sensed, in the cognized there will be merely the cognized. When, Malokiyaputta, regarding things seen, heard, sensed, and cognized by you, in the seen there will be merely the seen, in the heard there will be merely the heard, in the sensed there will be merely the sensed, in the cognized there will be merely the cognized. Then, Malokiyaputta, you will not be by that. When, Malokiyaputta, you are not by that, then you will not be therein. When, Malokiyaputta, you are not therein, then you will be neither here nor beyond nor in between the two. This itself is the end of suffering. So some of you may recognize this teaching as what was given to Bahia. Is it Dharaka? Let's see. Have it here. It's Daruchiya. Bahia Daruchiya. So that's in the Udana. This is a fairly well-known teaching. And I'll go more into detail about this. This is very deep teaching that I'm first hearing it. Most people wouldn't be able to understand. But Malokiyaputta says, I understand in detail, Venerable Sir, the meaning of what was stated by the Blessed One in brief. So he actually, even though he was advanced in years and seemingly fumbling around, got this teaching and he understood it. So he recites a poem in response to this teaching. having seen a form with mindfulness muddled, attending to the pleasing sign, one experiences it with infatuated mind and remains tightly holding to it. Many feelings flourish within, originating from the visible form, covetousness and annoyance as well, by which one's mind becomes disturbed. For one who accumulates suffering thus, Nibbana is said to be far away. Having heard a sound with mindfulness muddled, having smelt an odor with mindfulness muddled, having enjoyed a taste with mindfulness muddled, having felt a contact with mindfulness muddled, having known an object with mindfulness muddled, this is an object of mind. For one who accumulates suffering thus, Nibbana is said to be far away. When firmly mindful, one sees a form. One is not inflamed by lust for forms. One experiences it with dispassionate mind and does not remain holding it tightly. One fares mindfully in such a way that even as one sees the form and while one undergoes feeling, suffering is exhausted, not built up. For one dismantling suffering thus, Nibbana is said to be close by. When firmly mindfulness one hears a sound, one is not inflamed by lust for sounds. When firmly mindful, one smells an odor, one is not inflamed by lust for odors. When firmly mindful, one enjoys the taste, one is not inflamed by lust for tastes. When firmly mindful, one feels a contact, one is not inflamed by lust for contact. When firmly mindful, one knows an object, one is not inflamed by lust for objects. For one dismantling suffering thus, Nibbana is said to be close by. It is in such a way, Venerable Sir, that I understand in detail the meaning of what was stated by the Blessed One in brief. Good, good, Malukyaputta. It is good that you understand in detail the meaning of what was stated by me in brief. So then, Malukyaputta goes off into seclusion and meditation, and he attains full awakening. He becomes an arahant. So this is actually pretty advanced practice of guarding with the sense bases. And the Bahiya Darukya Daruchiya also became an arahant after hearing this teaching. He became fully enlightened. He very quickly, actually, he was requesting to ordain from the Buddha after he heard this teaching, and then he was instructed to go out and find robes in a bowl, and he met calamity at the time of the Buddha, the cattle would be wandering even in the street, and he got gored by a cow before he was able to come back. But the Buddha said he had become an arahant. He had awakened before his death. But fortunately, Malukyaputta had lived to be a ripe old age and an arahant. He says, then dwelling along withdrawn, diligent, ardent, and resolute, the venerable Malukyaputta, by realizing it for himself with direct knowledge, in this very life entered and dwelt in that unsurpassed goal of the holy life for the sake of which clansmen rightly go forth from household life into homelessness. So he did what was to be done and he became fully awakened. So there's a whole section there having when regarding things seen, heard, tasted, and so on, sense, there will be merely the seen, or merely the heard, or merely the sensed, or merely the cognized. So this may seem fairly straightforward, where we see an object, you just see an object without, and know, like I know that's a tree, but I then no other thought form comes up, like, oh, we still haven't put it back, when are we going to do that, or something like that. You know, I just see the tree. Not meaning that we would be like cattle and we wouldn't have any intelligence, but it wouldn't be provoking any kind of unwholesome states. I wouldn't have any attachment to an idea that the Bodhi tree has to be taken care of immediately or something like that. For now, it's here in the room, and I actually enjoy it here, although I can't see Chase. it's blocking the view. So the seen merely being the seen and the heard merely. So we just, especially while we're meditating, we may be hearing sounds. So the sound would just strike the ear. And I might even cognize that it's a bird or something like that singing, or a dog barking or anything like that. But then it would just stop at that. And I would be able to stay with my breath, my object of meditation. So this would be in, you know, just seeing, just hearing. So then he further instructs, when you were not by that, then you will, okay. So the by that, in the commentaries it says, by that means not affected by lust, hatred, or delusion. So you will not be by that when you just are seeing, or just hearing, or just, and when you are not by that, then you will not be therein. So your consciousness will not be established or bound by anger or lust or anything. You will not be in a state of anger, in a state of greed or something like that. This is according to the commentaries. When you are not therein, then you will be neither here nor beyond nor in between the two. This itself is the end of suffering. The commentaries have a kind of complicated explanation of this, and it's hard for me to really grasp it myself. But Ajahn Amaro, there's a monk, there's a monastery in our tradition north of Ukiah. It's in Redwood Valley. It's the Abhayagiri Monastery. And there was a monk there. He's now in England, named Ajahn Amaro. And he explained it as there would be no you or no self. He's actually saying the Buddha was talking about non-self. So when Malukya Putta, you are not therein, then you will neither be here nor beyond nor in between the two. So there's no self, there's no self-grasping, there's no sense of I and mine. This is mine, this is me, which is often a cause of suffering if we are very attached to things as me and mine, like our bodies, for instance, and they're going through change. And, you know, now I'm sitting on a Assayza bench where I thought I would be sitting cross-legged for the rest of my life, maybe. So things change with the body, you know. So if it's like me and mine, I might be really distressed by it. But if I just say, okay, this is the nature of things, you know, this is really borrowed goods, you know. This is just a physical, this is just physical phenomena doing its thing. So, anyway, I like that. That seemed to simplify it, that you are not therein, then you are neither here nor beyond nor in between the two. This itself is the end of suffering. So, like I was saying, this is pretty advanced teaching, but we can contemplate this and it can be helpful to us. There's another sutta that just follows this in the collection I was talking about in the Six Sense Bases in the Samyutta Nikaya. This one is called Decline. And then, so I just took some extracts. It's not as long as the last one I read. It says, and how, bhikkhus, is one subject to decline? Here, when a bhikkhu or a monk has seen a form with the eye, there arise in him evil, unwholesome states, memories and intentions connected with the fetters. If a bhikkhu tolerates them and does not abandon them, dispel them, put an end to them, obliterate them, he should understand this thus. I am declining away from wholesome states, for this has been called decline by the Blessed One. And the same is true with all the other sense bases. And these words sound pretty strong, but if you get like really mad and you feel like you want to go out and punch somebody, then you've got to say to yourself, no, I shouldn't do that. Or so, do something, you know, like if the field, if there, such an unwholesome mental state arises that you're concerned that you might act in a way that's very harmful, certainly you should say, you should obliterate. I mean, you should make really an effort to squelch those thoughts. Be kind to ourselves. We should be kind to ourselves. Some people, I know, meditators, people have been meditating for years. At the retreat, there was like the, in Barre, Massachusetts, there's the heating system. And it was like a radiator and the water passing through the pipes and the pipes popping. And it was like quite loud and startling sometimes in the night. So one of the we had some group discussion a few times and one of the meditators said, I shocked myself in the middle. I couldn't sleep because of the you know heating system. And then I was like, really? This anger came up. And she said, will it ever stop? And she said that really she was surprised that such strong anger arose in him. She wasn't going to do anything with it. But, you know, sometimes, you know, we'll see something or hear something and it'll really spark, you know, a really strong emotion suddenly. And that, so this is the kind of thing that we're so cursed being startled by it, surprised by it, actually helped dispel it. You know, if she didn't have any training, you know, to think, okay, I've got to be on guard for anger because anger is not helpful, it's very harmful. You know, some people might get up and go and complain to the management or something in the middle of the night and cause a big disturbance further or something. I mean, you know, this is just a mild thing, but, you know, people act rashly sometimes because of emotion. So I think this is more what you really need to obliterate. And abandoning and not tolerating may be better words to think about, just like normal kind of, if we notice things in ourselves that aren't so wholesome, awareness of it and then setting it down, depending on how strong it is kind of our response to it. But anyway, so this one is in decline because they tolerate it and they don't do anything about it. And a monk who is not subject to decline, when he or she sees a form with the eye, there arise in him or her evil, unwholesome states, memories and intentions connected with the fetters. If she does not tolerate them, but abandons them, dispels them, puts an end to them, obliterates them, she should understand thus: I am not declining away from wholesome states, for this has been called non-decline by the Blessed One. This is showing that these states still may arise. Even though we've been working like this, one person I was talking about has been meditating for many years, decades. So she was surprised that she was so angry. So it doesn't mean that we don't have emotions arise. So you're not declining if you're working with them. The third is, and what are the six mastered bases? So here, when a monk has seen a form with the eye, there does not arise in him evil and unwholesome states, nor any memories and intentions with the fetters. So this is mastery over the six sense bases. The monk should understand this thus: this base has been mastered, for this has been called a mastered base by the Blessed One. So this is very advanced practice. I think most of us are on the realm of still working with things arising in response to contact. And this is very natural, and we just need to be patient with ourselves, no matter how many decades we may be, unless we've mastered the sense bases. So this practice is something that is from the beginning of our path to the time we have full enlightenment. This is, we can just get more and more refined with our work with the sense bases. And the first thing to start out with is just being aware of the impact, being aware of just throughout the day when we see something, hear something, how it's affecting our mind. Or if we feel ourselves getting really tense, we might think, oh, a memory has arisen. Oh, I saw something that was unpleasant. Or I saw something that was very pleasant that is bringing up a lot of intense desire, and I shouldn't have it, or I can't have it, or it's not time for it now, or something. So just the awareness of it, and mindfulness of the body, working with the body, using the body as really a base for kind of a anchor, and just being patient with ourselves. So I offer this for your reflection, and we could have a few minutes for comments. Ayasuchita, I don't know if you have any comments or corrections or from what I've said.
Hey, that's good. The story for the talk. I don't have any questions.
Sister Nyanika, do you have any comment?
Just much appreciation. That was very on target for me. I very much appreciate it. I think that You're saying it's very deep, but it's also very simple. You know, just the very simpleness of just being with the experience and not layering on it and not getting caught in it. There's a lot more happiness in that. Thank you.
So, do you have any questions? Or?
No.
Tita, do you have any questions or comments?
I'll just comment that I feel much more calm and peaceful than I did when I walked in here. I don't know exactly why, but I do. And I have a question about the meditations. You specifically call this body awareness?
Mindfulness of the body.
Mindfulness of the body. So are there other meditations that focus on different things than that?
Well, mindfulness of the body has a lot of different methods. There's a lot of different ways to direct mindfulness to the body. Mm-hmm. And I just gave you two examples. One is just kind of what's called body scanning, but just awareness of the body itself. And it could be done in a variety of ways too. Mindfulness of breathing and mindfulness of all activities like, you know, walking, standing, walking, sitting, lying down, or any way the body is disposed, you can bring awareness to the body. So it's actually the most complicated of the, there's like what's called four foundations of mindfulness. The first one is the body. The second one is a feeling, and that's feeling tone. And it's actually it's talking about the experience of pleasure, or pleasant or unpleasant or neutral feeling at any of the sense bases. So awareness of that. Like, this is another way to guard the senses, is to really focus on what's called vedana, or feeling. If I hear a sound and it's unpleasant to me, what I bring my awareness to is my sense of it being unpleasant. But I don't allow myself to proliferate, to start complaining about it, or something has to be done about it, or whatever. Is it okay, unpleasant? And then there's another contact, you know, a sight, and then I might say pleasant, think pleasant, or pleasing, like the flowers are pleasing. So I'm aware of these things. And then also to be aware of what's neutral, like maybe the floor. If the floor was dirty, it would be unpleasant. If it was just washed and glowing, I might think it's beautiful and pleasant. But most of the time, I might not be paying attention to it, because the whole monastery has got pretty much the same flooring, except for a few places. So it's just there, you know. So, but I can be aware of. Or the base where all those flowers are, and I usually look at the flowers or the Buddha image or something like that. So that's pretty neutral. So this is a so that's the second one, is called feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral feelings at the six sense bases. And then there's mental states, which is a little bit more difficult to understand, but it's a states of mind, whether the mind is constricted or the mind is expanded, whether there's anger, the presence of anger or absence of anger. There's like, I don't know how many pairs. Do you know all the pairs? I can't remember all the pairs right now, but it's whether the mind is kind of exalted and expansive or constricted or, you know, just different mental states. And then there's the fourth one is dhammas, or mental qualities, or what's a better translation of that? Dhammas. It's phenomena. Yeah, that's a lot more complicated, and that includes the hindrances and the enlightenment factors, and it's kind of, that's a whole teaching in itself. It could take several talks to describe that, but when you're doing mindfulness of the body, all these things come up. Like, for instance, with the first enlightenment factor is mindfulness. So you're cultivating or you're developing mindfulness. The hindrances might arise and you'll be aware of the hindrances. But your focus, your object is at the body or the breath or something. So you'll be cultivating the mindfulness, and then you'll be aware of the arising of the hindrances and hopefully, you know, setting them aside. So that's, there's more dhammas or phenomena. The six sense bases are in there also, but you work with it in a specific way. So it's a very... The Four Foundations of Mindfulness is a very detailed teaching. But mindfulness of the body is a very fundamental, but it's also very essential and can help with all the other foundations. And we're often working with a lot more than we're aware of when we're, or that we might not be considering that we're actually doing this other work simultaneously while developing the mindfulness of the body. But I think, you know, the body is the best starting place, I think. This way it's usually taught. Does that help?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And also we have, on Sundays, we have a beginner's meditation and a Sunday meditation. So you're welcome, of course, to come again on Tuesday, but there's also a Sunday program too you might be interested in.
What time on Sunday?
9:30 is the beginner's instruction.
Okay.
I won't be here this Sunday, but I'm not sure who will be teaching that.
Okay.